Back, ladies and gentlemen, to Deep Thoughts. Today we're going to take another swipe at NASA and any related parties who engage in this. This is called NASA Selling Doomsday. And it's not going to completely be about just that, because there's not enough to fill up an hour. So we're going to recap sort of where the internet is with NASA, JPL, and subsidiary organizations, and sort of where the strategies are going with that organization, as just interpreted by the layman on the outside looking in. There's been this theme my whole life, and it's been your whole life as well. And it doesn't just focus on NASA, but this is the most alluring, easy, blatant way to explain it. But anywhere there's a mystery in life, you have devious assholes that seem to get in there first, and they extort things from society due to the fact that we are still ignorant of what they're talking about. They labor to create some sort of conspiracy or cautionary tale. They labor to come up with a cause and effect model to say, we have found this really bad thing in the universe, and we figured out how to keep it at bay, and if you give us money and whatever, your daughters, we'll keep it back, right? There were a bunch of individuals that figured out how and when eclipses occurred, and they would go around Europe and the world, and they would somehow get themselves, you know, they were fairly well-traveled, you know, they look good or whatever, they're able to talk to the authorities and tell the authorities to inform the king that there's going to be blackness and darkness and doom and gloom if they're not paid to do a ritual to undo this moment. And so kings sometimes would tell them to go fuck themselves. I'm sure some just did it and said, you know, I've seen an eclipse, dude, you know, spare me your horse shit. But it is said that several kings and diplomats caved in the second that the eclipse was starting to occur. This individual starts doing this ritual and saying, you know, how bad everything's going to be. And then, of course, they throw down a bunch of money and resources, and voila, the eclipse is over. Thank God we had that snake oil salesman, right? So this kind of shit has been going on forever, right? We now have this so convoluted, and this is actually an ancient formula, but the second that a government wants to conspire against its people, and there's no other format that leads into this, as soon as they want to conspire against their people, not for their people in private, but against, right? Individuals are using the behemoth bureaucracy of a government body, to steal from the people, to rob them of their rights, to put them in sort of some serfdom tyranny. They begin to develop this narrative that says, I can't tell you what I'm doing or what we're doing because it's a matter of national security. You want to know how the military-industrial complex came to be? Because before we had volunteer armies, right? It was pretty, you know, open book, transparent organization. You could walk right into the White House when Lincoln was president and just call out his name and get to the Oval Office and sit down and have a meeting. You could. And now, obviously, you can't, because the plans that are hatched inside those buildings are rarely for the people. Rarely, despite what recently elected politicians might want you to believe. Well, mystery has to do with how things are discovered, where they are, etc., etc. I'll give you a more esoteric example that some of you remember quite well. Apparently, Huntington Beach is the funnest goddamn place on planet Earth to fly your private vehicle over. But some of you remember when you remember reading about this. You don't remember this actually happening, but when the King Tut's tomb was discovered, you have an archaeologist who spent an inordinate amount of time digging for his tomb. And what happened was is that the guy had to pick an arbitrary point in the Valley of the Kings to search for the tomb that was rumored to be in the area. He dug in a circle. Well, he pick a point on a circle. I want you to go right about, 40 degrees. Stop. Go back to your starting point and go all the way around. And what he found out was that right where he stopped on his first dig, as he was going in this circle, he was right next to the tomb. But I think he spent some ungodly amount of years going the opposite direction, and he finally found it. So now you have this tomb of the most celebrated pharaoh that we know of. King Tut was a African black male, as all the Egyptians at the time were during his glorious era. His tomb was embroidered with things that even Ramses missed, right? Anunnaki, whatever his father's name was, wasn't given this much celebration. And so the archaeologist is surrounded by obviously locals that believe in a lot of superstitious stuff. But it was hatched that if you touch that tomb, then you're going to die. There's this, and you're going to die, obviously, everyone's going to die. And so, of course, when the tales started coming out, 60 years later, or 40 years later, it had been so many years that people in their 20s were just dying because they got old. They smoked cigarettes or whatever. But they tried to build a conspiracy that if you go in there and touch that, you're going to die. And what does that do? That keeps people out, right? So it can go in different polarities, right? It can keep you inside something and keep you outside of something. Close Encounters of the Third Kind, the movie with Richard Dreyfuss, directed by Steven Spielberg, written primarily by Steven. There is this transmission coming in from outer space. It's giving geographical coordinates. And they figure out that Devil's Mountain is this place where the aliens want to show up and say hello. And so what does the government do? They fake a chemical spill. They use this birdcage technique. Everyone's wearing gas masks, trying to escape on trains, which is very Auschwitz-y. Full evacuation. If you bring your bird to the site, they take it away, gas it, kill it, bring it back to you and say, yeah, oh my gosh, good thing you got your mask on. Richard Dreyfuss's character, sniffed through the bullshit, took his mask off, took a deep breath, and realized it was all horse shit. And he, a scientist, and this woman whose child had been abducted, they come up the backside of Devil's Mountain, crawl around the front side, and they get to see the fireworks show with the UFO and all the aliens. So NASA is an organization that is given the idea and the feeling that it's an international organization, which it obviously has its fingers in everything on planet Earth related to space travel. Somehow an arbitrary group of people, by the way, have claimed space, right? We're not allowed to send things up too high, because we're just mere fucking peasants on this planet, right? And there's some fucking Anunnaki people that have the jurisdiction over space. I think right there, we should all take a little step back and go, yeah, I don't think I'm going to allow you to have jurisdiction over the planet when you're just a fucking human being and so am I, right? Doesn't mean you can't have organizations that coordinate launches and that kind of thing to make sure we don't have someone launches a rocket in Utah and flies into the bottom of some 7:37, headed to Washington State or something. But NASA is a self-appointed organization by, you know, mainly funded by the United States of America that has taken on, supposedly, the charter to explore space. Well, space travels, no matter how you do it, low atmospheric launches, which seems to be all they're capable of doing. It's expensive because you have to hire very smart people. You have a tremendous amount of mistakes that occur. You just do. And so you build big, giant, multi-million dollar rockets or $100 million rockets, and they blow up on the tarmac. Well, back to the drawing board. Luckily today, we're getting more and more software developed that allows us to test this stuff inside a simulator instead of building it and then watching it explode. But it costs a lot of money. And as many people have figured out, NASA's real objective was to put a veneer, a cover, over the development of intercontinental ballistic missiles, Tomahawks, everything rocketry-based and military. And the two-stage rocket, to quote a metaphor for military domination in the world, is to sell military domination to the people in the notion that they're going to be killing their enemy. To drum up a bunch of Kim Jong-uns and a bunch of terrorist organizations, to demonize Assad, use these missiles on those individuals, keep the technology coming, right? Keep the R&D coming. Until eventually, the whole apparatus flips around and polices the people. The people, who are good-natured, couldn't imagine anyone doing this to them, will find themselves in a tyrannical fascist world. They will find themselves heavily depopulated. It would be the fabled Holocaust times 100 million, right? Because they'll be getting rid of billions of people. And so they have to keep this motor going, because NASA by itself earns $60 million a day to make payroll and pay for all their fucking $5,000 toilet seats. They, in cooperation with JPL, the Jack Parsons Laboratory, they develop software to create fake imagery that they sell you with a narrative that they've launched a rocket to a far-off place, and here's all the photographic proof. Aren't you happy? Please keep sending your donations. But do you personally vote on the funding of NASA, personally? I never have. I've never heard of anyone doing it. It's one of these organizations like the FDA, the FCC, the EPA, just sort of renegade organizations that get appointed by the next shilly president. They can completely fuck up and kill every single astronaut, supposedly, and there's no repercussions whatsoever. No one has to resign. Hell, if anyone cares how this shit even happens, like how does it occur? And could it have been prevented? And did you know it was going to have a high risk of exploding? I don't know if you've taken the time out to look up the Challenger survivors. You know, there's pretty compelling evidence that everyone on the Challenger 1986 survived that crash because they weren't in the vehicle to begin with. We've supposedly found every single one of these people. They have the same fucking names. Some guys say they're twin brothers using the same names. It's almost like Landfill and Beer Fest. It's so fucking hilarious how they do this shit. I mean, thank God these people didn't die. But when the space shuttle in 1986 blew up, Richard Feynman, a famous Brooklyn, New York physicist, was put in charge of the program to figure out what went wrong. And he's a genius, and he's very, he was just the most well-balanced physicist we've ever had. I mean, this guy, but he tells the story in his autobiography released in 1988 that he said, you know, I couldn't figure out exactly what was going on. The data suggests that they knew that there was a high risk of this thing blowing up. And I've been to Edward Tufte's school twice. I'll share that story in a second. But he said that he was eating dinner with the head of NASA, and the head of NASA brings him out to the garage and says, you know, I was thinking about the space shuttle and the explosion, and I thought, you know, we have these things called O-rings on the booster rockets, and I'm a carburetor enthusiast, and we have all these O-rings inside of our carburetors. And he goes, you know, when they get cold, they break and they snap. And I thought maybe the O-rings popped and snapped during launch because it was so cold. And immediately Feynman knew he was had. As he says in his own book, he says, these motherfuckers strung me along. They knew exactly what the goddamn problem was. They didn't want to admit it quickly because it needed to remain a mystery to the people. It needed to remain like, oh my gosh, golly gee, I didn't realize the fucking O-rings might crack and burst, right? Edward Tufte, the godfather of information design, who I've had the privilege of going to his seminar twice, he tells the story that he was hired by NASA to go in there and design redesign the data input that all the scientists had been telling NASA the day before. And according to him, they had anywhere from 12 to 13-hour straight meetings the day before that launch where all the scientists of NASA were saying, this thing's going to fucking explode if you launch it tomorrow because it's the coldest it's ever been in Florida. And he redesigned the information such that they realized that the coldest they'd ever launched, I think it was 69 degrees Fahrenheit, and they had nearly 30% failure rate of all these systems on the vehicle because it was so cold, and it was sub 40. I think it was like 39 degrees that morning where you had frost on everything. It was really super cold, but the White House supposedly put a massive amount of pressure to get this thing off the ground. Let's hope that the pictures that I've seen of all the astronauts aged 30 years is true, because it's the best doppelganger search I've ever seen in my life. But some of these people supposedly met these folks and confirmed that they hang on there to their false identities. I mean, good for them, right? But let's think about this. Doomsday. We live okay lives, right? Because what could be a doomsday situation is typically not in our circle of life. You don't wake up in the morning, hop out of bed, and deal with a doomsday situation, even if you're ill. An illness takes a while to catch up with you, right? Nowadays, thank God, there's 100 ways to push that shit out of your life and survive the whole thing and live another whatever number of years you got left. But where there is a container of mystery, a container of information and education that we don't have access to on an average basis, right? You know, how many of you dabble in astrophysics, right? Aerospace. It sounds more sophisticated and complicated than it really is, and that is absolutely the truth. These people get, you know, oh my God, you're an astronaut? You don't get all swept away by the pedigrees of long technical words. So it's tough to keep these organizations that seem to be wasting trillions of dollars every decade. It's tough to keep them going. You have to convince the population to give up enough money to essentially cure all of the educational woes we have in this country. We give those motherfuckers so much money that your kid could go to any Ivy League school in the world if we were just to turn that piece of shit organization off and give it to the kids. You want kids to learn science? Hey, how about not going with the inspirational model to get them into these degrees that have no, you know, validity? How about taking that money and developing degrees and paying these scientists who supposedly know all this shit to teach the kids? And the kids will run off and create private industry to get to the moon, to get to Mars, to travel the universe if it's possible. Now, doomsday technique is sold everywhere, right? You must do this because we have to prevent that. Every single time a president talks about expanding the size of a military, it always has to be on the heels of some imminent threat to the country. In the United States of America, as of May 2017, we are facing supposedly the threat of North Korea, who has never seen a nuke in their fucking life, but they laughably, okay, claim they've had nuclear weapons, and everyone around them says they have nuclear weapons. Anyone who says North Korea has a nuclear weapon is so completely fucking duped, they can't think for themselves for a split second. It doesn't mean that some terrorist organization won't use some nuclear-type device or something and blame it on them so they can create this war. I mean, Kim Jong-un, if he's saying what he's saying, someone needs to swat his ass into the fucking afterlife. But it's always based on this, right? Assad, who isn't hurting America at all, is our second target, which is hilarious. Russia, who absolutely doesn't want anything to disrupt their reformation of their country. They're increasing their population. Putin is subsidizing childbirth. They don't want anything to do with us in terms of war. They'd love to be our partners, and we should do that. Any asshole who says we should be enemies with Russia is some fucking Cold War, you know, fossil. That's why you can't keep these Nancy Pelosi twats in office. You can't. They hang on to doctrine from 30, 40 fucking years ago. They think that shit works on us today. Maxine Waters, my God. You're talking about her fucking body is an archaeological dig in itself, right? You've got to clean these old assholes out. Term fucking limits and age limits, right? You can't be a senator after you hit a certain age because you're carrying the doctrine and the dogma from your fucking past into the present. And you can only do a couple terms and you're the fuck out of there. And you don't get lifetime anything. It'd be a tiny pension. But you don't get fucking health care that's better than everyone else's health care. But which organization in our modern world encapsulates and owns technically through mental jurisdiction the most mystery in this world? I think it's NASA. I think it's JPL. I don't know of any organization that says, you know, this is our charter and this stuff, this information is in the middle of this charter and we are the world authority. We are the self-appointed world authority, how convenient, to all this information. And therefore, we can take the data and mulch it any way we like. Remember how we talked about mathematics in a previous episode in season 2? Mathematics is the way that you can get anything to happen. Anything. Again, you could take gravity and assign it to angel power and create this physical model where you're talking about how big the biceps are of angels to be able to lift and crush, push and pull everything. And you could make it work with what's predictably visible and just simply say those angels are invisible. So what are some of the doomsday things that NASA is the authority on, right? Well, the one that I've seen over and over and over, which I think might come up as a false flag eventually, is the coronal mass ejection, a CME. This is when the sun does a very natural thing that it has done since the beginning of time, that it blows out of its fusion surface, of its plasma core, gigantic arms of, you know, atomic matter that's very, very hot. Millions and tens of millions of degrees, which obviously cools down very quickly. And the theory is that these things escape so far out in space because they've been blown so far away that it hits Earth, and because it's made of, you know, incredibly dense clouds of electrons, supposedly the shield that has been protecting Earth forever, its natural electromagnetic shield based on the plasma core of Earth, same as the sun, same as all moons, same as all planets, suddenly fails, and this stuff kisses the ground and blows out satellites in geocentric orbit, toasts, you know, wiring, like back in the 1800s, supposedly, you know, you had telegrams that were disturbed by this stuff, which there's a lot of science behind that I'll try to get into before we're over. A couple things they don't tell you to keep this bullshit going is that 97% of the energy that leaves the sun gets sucked back into the sun because of its gravitational force. You can just watch it half the time. Big arm comes out, and as long as the camera's not zoomed up too much, you see the thing come right back into the sun. It's just the cycle. So you got 3% that escapes. Maybe on some, you know, heavy period, it knocks out 5%, right? But now let's take the odds of that thing hitting planet Earth, all right? Again, we're going to go with heliocentric, so just stay with me here. This ball is supposedly 93 million miles away. Again, as I always say on this show, if the sun was a football, Earth is a third of a period on a piece of paper. Just grab any book, look at a period, and then cut that into one third, and put it 36 feet away from the center of this basketball. Okay. So we're a tiny fucking target. If you're playing darts, you are trying to, you know, throw a needle at a pimple on a fucking gnat's ass, right? So there's something called diffusion. It's a natural process of everything, okay? Yes, it's slightly different in supposedly the vacuum of space, but when you throw something away from a circular object, a spherical object, you innately get diffusion by sheer vector of all the particles and where they go, meaning everything is going in a slightly different direction. For any of you who have a problem just grasping this, just think about two of you, you and your buddy, at a gigantic football field. One of you is going to walk straight towards the end zone. The other one, your buddy's going to be walking right next to you, but they're 1 degree off your path. And for 50 yards, you look like you're almost walking hand in hand, right? You could actually grab each other's hands. But as soon as you cross the 50-yard mark, you're going to start being so far away from each other that you'll probably be 20 feet away from each other by the time you hit the end zone together. Thing is the Earth is so teeny fucking tiny compared to the sun, compared to its distance travel, compared to the vector of all these particles, that the amount of that thermal energy, that ionic wave of negatively charged atom, or you know, sorry, particles coming at Earth is minimal. And it always has been, and it always will be. We have never, ever been in threat of a coronal mass ejection. Man has been conscious on this planet, okay, recording history for 60,000 years at least, all right? And no one has any pictures of how the whole fucking world blew up one day, right? You know, I was watching my cousin across over there, and that QME came in there and just fried him. I was okay where I was. It's never happened. Now, when it comes to all the fabled stories of how it has interrupted electrical wires and that sort of thing, you could do yourself a favor. Go look up all of the anomalies that were figured out when they tried to create wires for telegraphs. It is an unbelievable localized problem in that in order to put an electrical charge down a wire and send it a really long distance and then keep it going, reamplify it, it was probably one of the biggest challenges to mankind due to the way that they were building the wire, they were insulating the wire, when water hit the wire, the way that the electromagnetic field started interrupting itself, when they started turning corners, when they started hitting their telephone poles, their telegraph poles. Every single thing about a wire for a telegram was heavily scrutinized. I mean, they went through a dozen designs of major, major differences in how they shielded these wires and all this other stuff. So the wires themselves are fragilely put together without any interaction from the sun. And we know how corporations work. They do the bare minimum to get the job done. If it's vulnerable to the slightest outside interference, they will leave it there and just say, okay, well, this thing only happens every once in a while, so I guess we're okay. Someone goes, that's okay. Don't want to spend any money to get the job done right. Let's go. But they've been incubating this story up, and at the same time, they've been incubating up the idea that terrorist organizations can come in and mess with all of our power grids and all this other stuff, our transportation grids and that kind of thing. You know, various areas, you know, varying areas of the United States are more vulnerable than others. They, you know, most of the places are fairly well secured. They're videotaped and watched by guards, and they're patrolled by human beings when, you know, they can't advance the tech far enough to get the stuff really encrypted and protected. So we've done a pretty good job. But everything that NASA comes in with as a doomsday prediction is always something that belongs to the universe, and it's somehow abstracted away from human beings such that it's actually more of a threat inside our souls, because we are always told by NASA we have no control over the doomsday that they predict. Right? Someone could blow a bunch of smoke up your ass about ISIS and you know, whatever latest organization they have out there. But someone can come in on a military level and say, we as human beings, just sign up here for the military and we'll go kick their asses. And so we can solve it. But what's NASA sell you? Coronal mass ejections. And the next big one is you know, killer asteroids, meteorites, what they have coined as Earth Killer. Now, all of a sudden, what happens? The human beings that can save your life are now quarantined inside these two companies called NASA JPL. Without them and without their exorbitant budgets, which are actually military budgets for the most part, right? I mean, what's funny about it is, just to digress into that point for 1 second, think about how many times the space shuttle went up and we were told as the people, here's the big finger. You can't know what's inside the space shuttle. It's military. Well, it's like, okay, so let's see the line item on the ledger here that the military paid for that shit. Paid for the fucking gas. Paid for everyone's salaries. I want to see where the ledger went over to a military industrial complex payout, but it never happens, right? It's NASA pays for fucking everything. The doomsday stuff is always, always, always mapped to and coordinated on a timeline with the budgetary approvals of these organizations. So if NASA's coming up needing their budget, their annual budget approved by the acting president of the United States, they pay money. They take the money we've given them and they go off in many directions, wasting, I would say, tens of millions of dollars, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, creating these doomsday scenarios and then paying for the press to put this stuff out there such that we, as the layman down below, believe it. And that should be a little infuriating once you think about it. One of the funniest things when you get into computer-generated imagery in Hollywood is that, you know, there's a couple different types of folks that get into it. You know, there's the folks that tell people what to do, and they don't know shit. I mean, they know it's possible, yada yada, but they've never double-clicked a 3D application. They've never created a polygon in their life. They've never created a UV map. They've never animated anything. Yours truly got in as early as one could, you know. The one thing my computer teacher didn't know how to do in school was projecting a 2D plane of a 3D image in memory, which was kind of interesting. So when I came to California, I got heavily into that technology, which then obviously became the way video games do it today. But when I see, after nearly 30 years of looking at this shit, well, I guess 30 years, yeah. When I see the shit coming out of NASA JPL, when they tell us that they're flying a probe to an asteroid, I see the horrible CG modeling in these asteroids. I see the texturing problems. I see the, you know, compression algorithms. Whoever is doing these fake meteorite images have been stuck in a cave for so fucking long, they must be using software from like the early 90s. Because all the anomalies that we got past, everything that we worked and slaved over to make it photoreal, isn't present in these images, which are essentially, you know, they're essentially taking a photograph of a nemesis. And they're trying to scare everybody. They're trying to incite a riot in a way. You know, when H.G. Wells, Orson Welles did H.G. Wells, you know, when he did The War of the Worlds, right? I believe it's like in 39 or something like that. You know, he gets on the radio and he tells the world that Martians are invading, and they didn't break for any commercials, and they made it feel like it was totally real, and there's huge panic on the East Coast and around the United States. He got in some serious trouble for inciting a riot. But today, they've kind of figured out a way to kind of keep it from a riot. But how many, for those of you who have Omni Magazine back issues, Popular Science, Popular Mechanics, Scientific American, when you have all these magazines, go look up how many covers of these magazines have that impact photograph, right? Where the fucking meteorite's hitting Earth and it's just, you know, it's just blowing the fuck out of our planet, right? It's like the thing is impacting and it's the size of North America. Like in one shot, we're all dead. But in my opinion, the majority of all the stuff we've ever seen. I haven't personally seen anything convincing. You know, you have meteorites, again, with these round impacts on them, supposedly, right? Well, it's doesn't look like a crater to me. Every single impact is perfectly round, which means it had a perpendicular impact to a completely nebulous-looking potato turd in space, right? But it always comes up. It always comes up before budget time. Consequently, on the outside of the space program, it's very interesting how massive fires tend to show up about every 10 years in regions where the fire departments have to get budgeting upgrades for their helicopters, their firefighting, you know, cargo planes. When they, you know, someone needs a raise, you know, we have this blazing fire that takes out a few houses, and then it just seems to go away for about 10 years. And all the press, this is the funny part, when the press talks about it, either NASA or something else, it is always the undertow, subtextual meaning of the broadcast that this is why it's so good we have these organizations. Well, what's the theory? What is the theory behind finding an asteroid coming towards Earth and these space organizations? Pretty much a last-second notification that this is going to occur. Do you think the President of the United States is going to get out there and jump up on a microphone and go, "We're all fucking doomed. This thing is coming. Kiss your loved one"? Nah, they're not going to let us know. If it really happens, they're never going to let us know, so why are we paying for it in the first place? Right? But again, we have been on this planet for a very long time. The moon's been up there for a very long time, and at no point in recorded history have we ever seen an impact on either one of these objects. And now that we look at craters, it looks like they're all bubbling little pops from the inside of the planet. Again, Diamond Head looks exactly like the crater in Arizona. Exactly. The only difference is Diamond Head's in a lush tropical world, and the other one's in a desert. They tell you one's a volcano, one's an asteroid. Complete horseshit. But how does this, you know, nebulous-looking, again, potato-looking thing in space, how does that have any sort of internal bubbling to create all these little perfect round circles? It's because it doesn't exist. And NASA has merely taken what you see on the moon and made it look space-like with its completely ridiculous surfaces. I mean, these surfaces are always smooth, right? They always have texturing problems. You can even see where the UV map, which is where you take a, for those of you not in 3D, the way this works is that we create essentially a piece of wallpaper. And on that wallpaper is whatever texture, you know, you want the surface of whatever you're going to put this wallpaper around looks like. And so UV mapping is merely the technique of saying, your kids created this papier-mâché, bizarre-looking potato, and you come in with the wallpaper, and you're trying to make the wallpaper connect around this weird object in a way that, you know, all the seams connect so the pattern never breaks around this weird shape. Now, when it's a nebulous sort of gray pattern, it's a hell of a lot easier to bring these edges together. But they actually publish these bad UV map asteroids, assuming that you're going to think it's some orbital stitching, right? Well, you know, we take several pictures of it and we stitch it all together. How convenient, right? What else does NASA get into? Well, name a doomsday, earth-killing piece of science. Anything. Volcanic eruptions. Global warming. Right? Let's not call it climate change. Global warming. The heat of the water in the ocean. Sure. Yeah. And NASA's right there every fucking time. Fukushima? Not so much. Fukushima that's killing every single fish in the Pacific? Eh, not a lot of talk about that. We're going to do an episode on Fukushima here soon. But say this big object's coming towards Earth. You know, and the way they find these things is they take a picture of space. And then a few seconds later, they take another picture. And then a computer looks at the two images, overlays them, and if a star seems to move between the two photographs, they know that's an object that's moving. And then they lock in on it and take a lot more pictures, and supposedly they're triangulating its vector, trying to see if it's coming at Earth, right? How many times in your lifetime, I'm in my late 40s, I don't know, there's probably been at least a dozen reports of super close, mega asteroids coming next to Earth, and no one has ever videotaped them ever. Right? Supposedly, you can look up and see a satellite moving. It's a star that moves in a nice orbital pattern, right? Well, why can't we see something as massive as these fucking Earth killer things they keep talking about, right? When the three asteroids hit Jupiter, they had a heyday because they were able to say, see, you know, one of these things is as big as Earth, supposedly going into the bowels of Jupiter. It did not come out the other side. So whatever happened inside that impact, I would love to have seen, because it must have been crazy huge. But we're supposed to be able to send, you know, some like Armageddon, like Bruce Willis's Armageddon, where you send up a bunch of astronauts on some, you know, some asteroids video game thing, and you go up and you start shooting it and putting rockets on it and heating up one side to make it go in a different direction. We can't even get back to the moon, right? You know, you go with their official story that they actually went there, which they didn't. You know, I made an episode in season two called NASA's Fake Space Programs or Fake Space Programs, and I'm sort of bummed I did it because I guess I could do a part two on it. Because the evidence against everything that they're claiming to have done just keeps piling up and piling up and piling up. We now have these compilation videos on YouTube, if you haven't seen them, where you can watch the astronauts faking doing their 360 rotations. They're on harness wires, just like David Copperfield in the early 90s. They have two wires off the back of their pants around their waist. You've got astronauts reaching over, grabbing the wire to help steady a guy. And you have astronauts grabbing their wires because they didn't do the flip right. Broadcast live on television, obviously a blue screen behind them. In some cases, you could probably just build a set for some of that. It's pathetic how fake this stuff is. All this footage from the ISS, which is running all over Facebook and YouTube. All right, show me the fucking moon from the ISS. Why don't you? You're right there. You have a great shot. You have probably the best shot of anyone who's alive. I mean, you never do it because it's a set. They have these guys that do these one-hour spacewalks to provide live imagery down to Earth of Earth from space, from the ISS, with these horrible, you know, fisheye lenses that they put on these cameras to give you the sense that they're so high the Earth is this round ball. But every time they move the camera, you can see the fisheye lens correct the curve, such that the curve continues to repeat itself through windows and that kind of thing. Because it's a set. It's a rear projection set. We're paying for deception. We're paying for this notion that we could somehow access an asteroid years and years and years before it gets to us, right? Imagine a rock the size of Rhode Island coming at Earth. And you send up a bunch of nuclear weapons. And you just slam them straight into the surface, and they're 100 megaton bombs or whatever the hell you think you're going to do to vaporize and cause a little tick in its vector towards you, right? You want to change its vector just a little bit. Maybe change its velocity a little bit. Even if it's the size of New York City. All right. You have this big thing coming at you, and now you're going to put up a little tic-tac that's going to spark. You know, it's almost like those little things that you buy, and they look like little sperm tadpoles, and you throw them on the ground, and they go snap. It's like throwing that at the ground and expecting the Earth to move. So here's the thing. Just to rewind and look at this doomsday bullshit. One, if there's an Earth killer coming at Earth, ain't no one going to tell you in the first place. So why the hell are we paying to know? Why are we paying to know? No, if it hits Earth, no one's going to be able to get that deposit out and go to the Bahamas. You know? What, the rich elite need more fucking leisure time before an impact? I don't think so. They do whatever the fuck they want constantly, right? We're never going to be told, and there's nothing they can do to change its fate. Nothing. So why pay for it? They can't keep a camera on from a launch all the way to its destination. They got plenty of power. It's a digital camera. It ain't got a bunch of 35 millimeter film with, you know, perforated holes to keep everything aligned. It's just a digital camera. And they are unable to keep a camera on from the second it launches at Cape Canaveral all the way to the surface of Mars. Right? They can't. they've created this bullshit about the 5 to 10 minute blackout period when the lunar module and now, of course, the shuttle and any other reentry vehicle comes back to Earth so that they can switch cameras. That's the only reason why that whole bunch of hocus pocus science was invented. Because you have this, you know, this vehicle coming in and now we have to switch to the prop. You know, the astronauts seemingly fell out of the sky in a lunar module and had parachutes, you know, three big giant parachutes attached to them. And then, of course, everyone swoops in to rescue the astronaut after they blow the hatch. Well, if you could track it and watch it and communicate with them, it'd be a hell of a lot harder. But right now what's happening is that NASA is done, JPL is largely done in the eyes of the people. We're probably not at 50% yet, but we're approaching a 50% awakening of the amount of people in the modern world and first world countries that know that they're full of shit. You'd be surprised that a lot of third world countries already know they're full of shit, but that might be due to propaganda and just, you know, nationalism in their local area. So, they know the clock is ticking. And so they have spun up these side companies to take the responsibility of NASA off surgically. They're probably going to create somewhere around, you know, 2 or 3 dozen SpaceXs and charter them all for whatever individual responsibility that NASA had. So you might have your doomsday division runs off and they're one particular company while, you know, SpaceX fakes a bunch of missiles or a bunch of, you know, rockets going up and landing back down as they cut the feed just as the camera lands. I mean, give me a fucking break if you guys saw this, but, you know, those of us at CG, we look at the imagery of the landings, and they're missing most of the frames it would take to pull this thing off, but there's just telltale signs of particle systems, of compositing, all this other stuff in their imagery. They never invite the press to ever witness the landing live, which is why they put it out in the ocean. They did another ocean landing where the camera is filming the landing pad, right? And they're, oh my God, and they're all this telemetry and shit going on the camera. And the second it's supposed to land, oopsie, they lost the camera feed due to a satellite alignment problem. Bet my cell phone works on that fucking platform. And then all of a sudden the camera comes back on and the rocket is right there. Because it was craned onto the platform in the middle of the cut. And everyone's faking this heroic yelly, screamy crowd. You know, if you've ever seen a movie where you have either a celebratory crowd that's like, hey, you know, we blew up the Death Star, yay, hurrah, or someone's, you know, rioting, right? If you're mildly aware of how humanity really behaves in these situations, there's always a level of fiction in their behavior, what they yell, how they scream, the expression on their face. It's really, really tough to get extras to do that kind of stuff legitimately, because they're not really unified in some fiction. Each one of the extras is thinking of a different thing that they think they're seeing. And depending on how articulate the director is and how persistent he is to get the shot, they let shit slide all the time. Well, this live SpaceX sort of gang, you know, I don't know if you know, but, you know, when they do like MTV Music Awards, they put all the fake dipshits down by the front stage to pretend like they give a shit whether or not Beyonce's pregnant or not. Same thing. And so you have these just fake-ass, you know, celebratory jumping around stuff. And, of course, all the people in charge are kind of looking around like, God damn it, we are lying our asses off and stealing hundreds of millions of dollars from the people. And so they're never that excited. Just like the astronauts that came back from the moon, Apollo 11 mission, they sat there terrified that the scam was going to be exposed, right? You know, my opinion, all this shit's fake. All of it. And there seems to be this, you know, living in Southern California especially, there's a lot of engineers of NASA that live in this area. And you'll bump into their family members, and I've said this before, but you'll get, you get in an argument with some of the family members because when you tell them that this shit never really happened, they get very upset and they go, well, my father built the bolts that were on the door of the Apollo 11. Well, my dad engineered this and that and this. And you're looking at him like, yeah, he did. He totally did. And he probably did a great job. And had we actually gone to the moon, those bolts probably would have done their thing on reentry. Perhaps they did it when the lunar module came back down and landed after being pushed out of a, you know, C-130 equivalent, right? But I'm stealing from them this sort of stolen pride, you know? You know, my parents, you know, if one of my parents was some super scientist and invented, the fucking cure for cancer or whatever, actually got us to the moon or whatever, that's not me, that's them. I have to do my own thing, make my own mark on society. Sure, you might be able to do some math and go, well, I bet he's really smart because his parents are smart. Maybe. Everyone knows a dipshit that has brilliant parents. There's no one-to-one correlation there. I want to make this episode to catch up on some of this content that's more esoteric, that kind of surrounds NASA. But I just want you to see, just as a blatant black sheep, this scam of selling doomsday to the people. And I want to beg of you to stop repeating this shit as if it's real. Right? Stop talking about QMEs knocking out our power supply here on Earth, right? You have to understand that the second the power goes out, as much as the power companies lose money, they make a shit ton of money as a result of it coming back on and doing all the repairs and surcharging because now they got to re-throw the entire fucking power grid. I want you to remember this. We subsidize the shit out of bridges, nuclear power plants. Like, the local community gets taxed to build these fucking things. And then the corporations swoop in, or the state swoops in, and keeps the money turned back on, right? We'll build an entire nuclear power plant with private sector money, with people's money, taxed right out of the district. And as soon as the goddamn thing comes online, they hand it over to Edison. And Edison immediately charges us profit. Well, that must be nice, right? Hey guys, why don't you build me a money-making machine? Why don't you build me an ATM and then put money in it for me every day because I want infinite cash? And so this whole green movement that's popped out of the last 10, 15 years has been a scam of doing global warming bullshit, forcing us to go green using district money and local state money and federal money to rebuild the infrastructure that then will be immediately handed over to the energy corporations to charge us money for the shit we paid for. Anytime something becomes a strategic resource, it must be absolutely price controlled, and hopefully the price has to be the lowest possible price at the highest possible quality, right? So oxygen, water. Now, electricity. Electricity shouldn't be allowed to be a private sector commodity because we cannot live in a modern society without electricity. One could contest that internet is a strategic resource. At no point should an ISP be able to charge me for internet connection at my house. It should be a state-controlled commodity because I have to have it. I don't have to have television. I don't have to have Netflix or HBO Go. Those could be private sector things. And hell, if I'm not paying a luxury tax for everything that's a mandatory thing for me to survive, like water, right? Then I can afford to pay a little bit more for HBO Go. They can go from $11.99 or whatever the fuck it is to $19.99, whatever. My garbage absolutely has to be collected. Otherwise, the world turns into a shit pile. Really? Right? They gouge the shit out of us in Southern California, pretending like they actually recycle anything. You know, everything goes on a shipping cart directly to China to be burned up and turned into our toys. Right? We ship a bunch of aluminum over. Well, everything that comes back is, you know, 1,000x what they paid for the actual aluminum, because we're giving it to them for damn near free, right? We're a little off base, but thought I would tie all that stuff together. So what do we do with NASA? Let's conclude with that idea. And I'll probably retouch on this with other episodes, but honestly speaking, what do you do with a corrupt organization anywhere in the world, right? What happened to Enron after we found out that they were a complete bullshit organization built by, you know, George W. Bush's college roommate? What do? We shut it down. Unfortunately, people get hurt because they have their 401ks inside the stock options of the company. We can deal with that separately. Bail these people out a little bit. The executives need to go to jail. Inside NASA, you have a bunch of people who are innocent, probably the overwhelming majority in the 90 percentile rating. And then you have somewhere hidden in the Fort Knox bunker of JPL. Just try to go to JPL in Pasadena and tell me how that goes for you. There's individuals who have crafted software who had no idea how it was going to be used, and eventually gets used to create fake terrain photographs to sell back to the people. And what blows my mind is people will watch the Matt Damon movie Martian, and they're looking at the Martian surface, and it looks exactly like the photographs, even better. And no one asked the question, how the fuck did they create those terrains? It's made with a project called Terrigen 4. Terrigen 4 is in its fourth version. You can go download it on your computer today. And there's another one, too, that does it, and I forgot its name, but I play with it as well. You can make these terrains in your computer. So you think the stuff's real? Really? NASA JPL is most likely just a cover story for all the military development. I'm not sure in this day and age we need to actually veneer evil with good objectives. I think actually people are so convinced that these terrorist organizations exist, or the Ruskies want to get us, or Kim Jong-un is going to come over and throw a nuclear bomb into Seattle, Washington or something, that they would probably pay for it without being lied to. What's interesting right now in the world is that there are a bunch of people that haven't really formally organized. Now, some have for the flat earth thing, but just take heliocentric, normal old NASA. We haven't seen someone create an organization that goes after them 100% and holds them accountable for what they say they're going to do. Some of us remember being, you know, I was a total space junkie when I was a kid, science junkie, NASA junkie. Didn't really know who JPL was, but it would always come up in conversations. But when the space shuttle used to go up in the late 70s, early 80s, you had experiments that they did. And they were on the hook to show the public, what are you doing up there? We're spending a shit ton of money. What are you doing? They have not shown us a modicum of focus, of real intent to do anything scientific. They're up there fucking around doing nothing. And that's per their claims of being there, right? Like I said, they use fisheye lenses and they have a guy out there for an hour just filming the Earth to give us this false sense that they're there, the false sense perhaps that it's round. You know, that might sound crazy, but it's like take off the fisheye lens. Just film it with a normal rectilinear lens that shows us exactly what you're seeing out of your eyeballs. It's time someone hold these organizations accountable, and we're just sort of amassing the brain power and our strategies of how to best walk into a town hall meeting with Neil deGrasse Tyson and Bill Nye, the douchebag guy, and just level these guys to the ground with a few examples. Imagine being on that show and you bring the reel in of the composite. It's like two minutes and 50 seconds of all the astronauts faking their rotations, grabbing wires. Imagine that going out on national television. It'd be interesting to see those guys squirm in their horseshit. We're almost there. And you know why? They can't stop us making these videos. They can't. Sure, YouTube can do whatever, knock out ad revenue. I don't need any ad revenue to run this show. I'm not making anything that's horrendous. It's also on vid.me, and there's Vimeo, and there's a bunch of other places I can take it if they would ever try to choke us out. I could put it on my own website, and you just download the freaking movie file. They can't stop us. I think that's about it. We'd love to hear your feedback. Now, for those of you who are big flat earthers, I understand you're just kind of rolling your eyes about the whole notion that I'm there. But you know what? Even if you're a flat earther, let me just invite you to this party anyway. Turn off your flat earth brain for 1 second and turn on back on your traditional heliocentric world. If you want to beat NASA, don't try to be in with flat earth, right? Again, we are still miles and miles away from anyone proving it's flat, right? We haven't had someone go to the Antarctica and find the wall, right? No one's proven there's a firmament dome, etc., etc. None of that's been done. So until you have the smoking gun in your world, I'm telling you right now, you can beat them at their own game. You can beat them at their own game just by demanding accountability. If the government understands one thing, it's accountability. They don't like to do it, but they understand it. So let's focus on accountability. Let's reset who gets to go to space. If you're inside these organizations and for whatever reason you made it through this entire video, either laughing or paying attention, going, oh shit, yeah, he's right. Do me a favor. Leak something out. Leak some incredible smoking gun out the door. And I'm sure it's very difficult to find one, to be honest. These organizations are heavily compartmentalized. But, you know. Thing is, if you're a scientist and you know what the hell you're talking about, wouldn't you rather work for an organization where every day you came to work and you actually accomplished something that had to do with what you thought you were going to be doing as a child? You know, the two guys that debriefed me about the moon missions being a fake, who were combined over 30 years working for NASA, they resigned after being given the offer of having an infinite paycheck for the rest of their lives to lie about going to Mars. They quit. And people roll their eyes to me every once in a while when I tell them that story. I'm like, fine, quit your fucking job. What do you do for a living? Oh, so it's okay. So imagine, you no longer do that anymore. You put all of your money in your college degree. You put all that time into learning how to do that, and you pop out of that industry and you never go back because you have found out that you have been lied to so badly that you don't want to be a part of the lie. I know very few people on planet Earth that have ever quit their jobs. It's usually always someone on TV that I've seen, you know, some operative somewhere who realizes he's overthrowing countries, like the economic hitman who, by the way, finished his career and then wrote the book about how he fucked all these countries over in South America. So he's sort of a pseudo-hero if there ever was one. But the two guys that I talked to back in 1991, they weren't messing around. They were working at the company I was working for. And so there you go. They quit. They changed industries completely from aerospace to like computer programming. So hope you feel me. DeepThoughtsRadio.com for all the feeds. We have switched over all the feeds to that domain. So if you're coming in through a video and you're wondering why your podcast isn't updating, again, it takes me sometimes up to about 48 hours to get the podcast up to date because I always wait for the video to render first and then life gets busy from time to time. But definitely go over there and hit the podcast link inside your device if you're on Android. If you're coming in on the Apple, just go to iTunes and search on Deep Thoughts Radio. For any of you who do like iTunes, we could use some reviews over there if you dig the show. Always save that to the end because then people who hate it will never hear this recommendation. If you're having problems watching Season 1 due to copyright issues on YouTube, please go to vid.me for Season 1. Or just go to deepthoughtsradio.com and click on episodes and rewind the feed back to Season 1. And everything is in there and it's perfect, perfect the way I edited it format. And I think it's episode 52, even in America, has been completely gagged for audio for some goddamn reason. I don't know what the deal is. So YouTube may or may not survive the next 10 years in the way that we understand it to exist, but there are competitors coming out every day, so hopefully they don't go under. We have to support them so they don't go under, right? There is Patreon for anyone who wants to donate. The goal is to buy an HD camera for Season 3, but we didn't hit any of that goal. That's fine. If we miraculously raise that money, we'll simply buy it in the middle of the episode and this shit will get even tighter. I'm not looking forward to rendering 4K versions on my computer, but we're ready. Anyway, take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.